Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast from Susie Larson Live. Enjoy the conversation.
It's only just a matter of.
Welcome to Susie Larson Live. Always honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His incredible, real presence in your life. Well, from the 1940s through the 1960s, young pregnant women entered the front door of a clinic in a small North Georgia town. Sometimes their babies exited out the back, sold to northern couples who were desperate to hold a newborn in their arms. But these weren't adoptions, they were actually transactions. And one unethical doctor was exploiting other people's tragedies. Jane Blasio joins me. She was one of those babies. She's written a book. I told her before the show, it reads like a novel or like you're right in the middle of a movie. Her book is titled Taken at Birth, Stolen Babies, Hidden Lies, and My Journey to Finding Home. You're not going to be able to put this book down. Let me just tell you that right now. We've got a handful of copies to give away, and it's a story that needs to be told. If you want in on the drawing, you can just text the word book to 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Quick announcement. We're just collecting stories these days. Would love to know how Faith Radio has ministered to your heart. If a program has made a difference in your life, we're so encouraged to hear from you. You can share that story by calling our Faith Line or hopping on our website after the show at myfaithradio.com and just share your story. We may even give you a call and an interview if you're okay with that. But we would love to hear from you. Let me tell you about my guest now. We'll get her on the show. Jane Blasio is a Hicks baby, sold at birth and passed through the back door of a clinic in North Georgia. I can almost not even bear to say that. She has served for more than 19 years in federal law enforcement, an expert in illegal adoption. She's helped unravel the mystery of Hicks Clinic, breaking the story in 1997. She's appeared on many major media outlets and was the investigative lead on the recent TLC docuseries, Taken at Birth. Jane, what an honor to meet you. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's my honor. Thank you for having me.
Well, we love to start every day talking scripture, and I'm just wondering, I know you're a woman of faith. What's God been speaking about these days?
Oh, so he has been speaking loud and clear to me, not just one verse, but Romans 12, verse 9 through 21. Mm-hmm. With the emphasis on 21, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. So, man, he just keeps telling me over and over, you know, Paul's teaching talks about how to behave and how to overcome. But what's hit me lately about this passage is that it's speaking to us singularly in our walk, but that it's to be done with others supporting us and with us serving others. And, you know, I knew this passage, right? We read this passage, Romans is, you know, Paul is just so amazing in how he teaches about God's word. But I had, for most of my life, just been doing my thing by myself. And it was actually, I reference in the book that, you know, I backslid. I went into a wilderness period, and it was because I was trying to do it by myself. And so this is what he's been speaking to me here lately. It's like, yeah, you need to, this is how you're supposed to have your behavior, but you can't do it by yourself.
Love that. That's just excellent insight. Got a pastor's wife friend, and she said, without fail, we watch when certain people stop coming to church, it's just a matter of time with 100% accuracy. 100% of the time, they drift. She said, they stop fellowshipping, stop being in community. They just isolate, and then they drift. And boy, we're not meant to do this alone, so I sure appreciate that. Wow. Give us a little backstory on your growing up years. What those years were like and when you first learned that you were adopted.
So I was 6 years old when I first heard the term adoption, basically. When you're six, how much do you know? I don't know how your understanding of that grows over the years. But my parents had brought my sister Michelle and I in. She was bought from the Hicks Clinic as well 4 years earlier than me. And they had brought us in because someone was using the term black market babies on the playground. And so they took that opportunity. They felt that it was needed. I agree with them to explain what adoption was. And they really didn't explain it. They just said you were adopted. And it took several years after that to really understand what that meant. I knew I was different. I knew I didn't look like them. I knew I didn't act like them. I knew there was just, I was just different from them. And that was really, that was the first, my first realization of what adopted was.
How did these kids know about Black Market? I mean, how, where did they hear that from?
Well, you know, my parents, when they bought Michelle and I on the two different times, you know, it was a very close-knit neighborhood, and they had really close friends, and we had cousins, and my grandparents lived in the neighborhood, and, you know, the story just, it kind of gets told with the parents, and sometimes the parents aren't paying attention to who's listening, and so the kids picked it up from that, from their parents.
Wow. Yeah. And how would you describe your family life, apart from being adopted and suddenly kind of hearing that there's more to that story, but just in general, life with your sister and with your parents, what was that like for you?
You know, it was sometimes normal, sometimes extreme. You know, I detail in the book, what I went through growing up and as far as how my parents were. And sometimes it was, you know, I was out in the backyard playing like every other kid, you know, but then, you know, the next moment I'm watching, you know, my father being taken away in handcuffs. So it was just very this hodgepodge of normal, you know, with extreme moments of uncertainty, confusion, and, you know, just not having any, not having a solid ground, a solid,
yeah,
that rock. Yeah.
Wow. Were they nurturing? I mean, I so appreciated as I read through the book, you know, how you can only imagine their paranoia. I mean, knowing that they'd done a backdoor transaction, you can imagine they were on eggshells all the time and wondering when they're going to be found out. But did you pick up on that, or did you feel like they were nurturing towards you since they wanted you enough to do something illegal to get you? Were they possessive? I mean, what was that like?
They were... Well, I mean, yeah, in reference to that being on eggshells, I can remember until I was probably 12 years old, my parents wouldn't let me play out in the front yard unless they were right there. And that was, you know, that's in reference to my mom was scared half to death that somebody was going to come and take me back. Hmm. It was very odd. It was an oddity. You know, you don't realize that until, you know, you're older and you look back on it and you go, wow, yeah, that was really odd. My mother was not nurturing at all. In fact, it took my walk with God and him making me understand how love is not perfect. It's very imperfect when we look at it through human eyes. And she was not perfect. But I realized, you know, just, you know, where she was coming from, you know, in her head a little bit later in life. My father was always fun. He was fun to be around, and he had some very dark tendencies, but he was always the life of the party. So it was this very weird mix between, you know, just being comfortable and being uncomfortable with the two of them.
And why was he hauled off to prison again?
Well, the first time, you know, my father was a cop. He was with the local PD, and my father was very smart, sometimes too smart. And he had been placed on light duty with the Akron Police Department, and they placed him in the stolen goods desk. So he was supposed to be tagging everything as it came in. And somehow he and several other of his fellow cops they decided they would start fencing it. If it had been there for a long time, they would go ahead and just start selling it. And so, of course, they all got caught. And that was his first felony. And then he went on to mostly IRS felonies from that point on. But that was the one I had seen him being taken away with the cuffs, was the actual cop.
Wow,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was.
We're going to pop.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Wow. You know, and as you say, you know, when you're growing up, it's what you know. Your context is what you have and what you know. So you don't really know if it's different until someone starts poking holes and asking questions. And you were obviously a sharp young girl. I don't know. I mean, how many would have kind of grabbed hold of that to go, wait a minute. I mean, it seemed like you had the investigative gene before most would ever know that they had it. So let's pause here. But when we come back, I want you to just kind of pick up the story of when you started to go, I need more answers, because this is not adoption. Something else is a foot here. I want to know more about that. I'm talking to Jane Blasio. She's appeared on major media outlets telling her story, and there's even a TLC docuseries on her story, Taken at Birth, Stolen Babies, Hidden Lies, and My Journey to Finding Home. Got a handful of copies of this hardcover book that reads like a gripping novel. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484, and we will be back in just a minute.
When I don't feel like I'm worth defending, when I'm tired of my pretending, hold on to me.
When I stop to pray. Thanks so much for tuning in to Suzy Larson Live, talking to Jane Blasio today. She was sold at birth, passed through the back door of a clinic in North Georgia, and has served now for more than 19 years in federal law enforcement. Her book is titled Taken at Birth, Stolen Babies, Hidden Lies, and My Journey to Finding Home. What a gripping story, gripping book. We got a handful of copies to give away today. You can text the word book to get in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. So we're just walking our way through Jane's story. And Jane, at this point, before the break, you were talking about how as a child on the playground, you got teased. Someone said you're a black market baby, and that's the first you'd heard that you even were adopted. And it wasn't even a legal adoption. It was a black market transaction, as you say. So take us to the point where now you're probably adolescent, young teen, but you start to ask some hard questions. Take us to that point.
Yeah, so I asked a lot of questions growing up, and I don't like being told no. So I think that was the, I think that was what, was kind of like the catalyst for me as I grew up. But, everybody has a birth story. Their mother says I was in labor for 12 hours, and, their father tells them they had a lot of hair, and they just, they did a lot of crying, or they were a good baby. And I didn't have that. And there was no mention of it. And if I even started to ask those questions, man, you could just feel how it was just so, the air just changed, And my sister, Michelle, she didn't care. I mean, she and I were like polar opposites, I was that type A, she was always so laid back. And so I don't think my parents were really ever asked those questions until I started asking them. And it was just this uncomfortableness. So it was like without my birth story, and then to look and go, okay, they're really uncomfortable about this. There has to be more, there just has to be more to this because they're not telling me. And I'd ask a question and their answers were usually one or two words and that was it.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah.
Wow. Let's jump ahead to Dr. Hicks. Give us some backstory on him, how he came to be such a wicked, evil man, truly. I mean, how he started out and what happened with him and what, even the things that he did for listeners to understand.
So Dr. Hicks, he had a small clinic, and if you take a look and you Google the town of McKaysville, Georgia, it was very, very small. It's still very small, and it's up there in the mountains. And so Dr. Hicks was kind of like, he was a god, he was a subject matter expert on all things, medical and the things that were needed. He started off as a doctor for the mining company over on the Tennessee side, which is right across the street. It's twin cities. One's on Tennessee, one's in Georgia. And he lost his license for for selling drugs. So then he moved his practice over to Georgia, just across the street, and he began doing abortions. And then eventually he moved his way into selling babies. And, on the outside looking in, when you talk about people getting babies, you go, well, these people couldn't have babies. But what he was doing was, A, it was illegal I'll say transactions. But he was telling mothers that had twins that one of their babies had died and he would sell the other. Or he would make the choice for these women that had already had families and he didn't
want babies.
Absolutely wanted those. That was their baby. Their husbands would come in with them. And he would tell them the baby died, even though they heard the baby crying, even though they knew that was not the case. And he would basically say the baby died. And then he would turn around and call a couple from Ohio and tell them he had a baby for them. Yeah.
Did anybody get to a point where they're like, this is not adding up, this is not right? I mean, first of all, how many babies do you think he sold over time?
So we really don't know exactly what the number is, but we know it's approximately around 200 that came to the Akron area alone. Yeah. Yeah. So, and we don't have any proof of it going into the 40s, but I believe that it did go into the 40s. So, yeah. So we know when the oldest Hicks baby, and he's 72 today. So that would have been in the 50s, but I think it went into the 40s, and I have no idea. Wow. And I believe there's another cache of babies somewhere with or without a Hicks baby. With a Hicks clinic birth certificate. I think that there's more than that. I think there's a lot more than that. Yeah.
And there's some barbaric stories of not only did he just steal the baby, but he destroyed women. I mean, physically, he tore them up. I mean, what was that about?
You know, the women that came to him, a lot of them didn't feel that they had a choice, that they didn't have any place to go. In today's terms, I mean, I can only imagine how many malpractice cases he would have. There were women, and, I detailed this, and it was so hard to tell the story just by, having a few moments. But, there were women that, my sources had told me that were left out on the curb in McKaysville outside of the clinic with the shades pulled down and the doors locked, and these women were bleeding to death. So, absolute abuse of power, absolute abuse of life that went on there.
I have three grown sons, but I was on bed rest for my middle one for 3 months and then 6 months for the third one just because of a high-risk pregnancy issue. But I would go in and out of the hospital during that second one to stop labor. And the nurse, I got to know the nurses, and one of them said, just pray you don't get Dr. Butcher. And I'm like, okay, that sounds like a good prayer. And I'm like, is that his name? And they're like, no, it's what we call him because he's so evil in what he does to women. She said, we can look at the woman's incision and know that what doctor they have because he hates women and he takes it out on them. And I'm thinking, you're so vulnerable, in childbirth. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I pray I don't get this doctor, but I did get him. And when Kev was out of the room, he was evil and did such terrible things that I was so traumatized by that delivery, so incredibly so, that what I didn't know that I was like, when I went in for my 6-week checkup, my doctor is wonderful, said, I want you to go home and write down in detail everything you just told me. And I could see sweat on his temples. And when I walked out, he apparently said, there's our lawsuit, because they were trying to get him out because he was a bull in the china shop. Long story short, 6 years later, I come home from teaching an aerobic class. The news calls me in the voicemail, and then the AG called Attorney General. Don't speak to the news. He's being investigated. And he had abused so many women for so many years. And the one that had the guts, she was a 6-week post-delivery. But she looked, she had short shorts, high heels, tattoo on her ankle. And he thought he could get away with something. He followed her out and allegedly raped her in her car and said, you're trash. No one's going to believe you. And she drove right to the police station. And that opened up the case. And he actually lost his license. And I just, I'm thinking, oh, my word. I just couldn't believe, I don't know. I wrote my letter. I felt like I did my piece, but I just felt sick that I should have pushed harder because of all these women. But anyway, I digress. Yeah, but they're out there, and it's just so heartbreaking,
Yeah, and the part of the tragedy is that people knew what he was doing, and they were looking away.
Yeah.
And, when I say people, I'm talking about people that were in places of power that could have stopped some of this, and they didn't.
So for you, so this doctor, I'm looking at my clock here. Tell the story of Prissy. This is a girl, her brother brought her in, and she at first was thinking she wanted an abortion and then thought, no, I can't do it. I want this baby. And he kept trying to kind of condescend to her, tell her how shameful it is that she's pregnant, not married, and she doesn't want to keep this baby. And then tell us what happened to Prissy next.
So like the young girl you were just talking about with the Dr. Butcher, he made a judgment on Prissy, a young girl, she made a mistake. Her brother brought her in and, they were going for answers. They were looking for someone to help them with answers. And she decided that wasn't what she wanted. She was going to keep that baby. And Dr. Hicks made the choice for her that she was not going to keep that baby. And, you it's just so hard to fathom.
Yeah.
That somebody, not only are they have so much disregard for human life that begins at conception, right? But then to disregard that you have this young woman that she wants to keep this baby, you know, and then you look at it in a third way, and that is, she's a woman, so he got to do what he wanted to her. What choice did she have?
Yeah.
And she had no idea. She was trusting. Her brother was trusting, because they had been referred, that this guy would help them. And he didn't help them. He absolutely destroyed them. And Prissy and Irwin are names that they are not, they're real names of the people, but the people are real. You know, this isn't, life is not a game. You know, that's just the thing that I just kept going through my head listening to that story for the first time all those years ago. Life is not a game. Why are you playing with these people's lives?
Wow.
And yeah.
Hmm. And Prissy was one, you know, who had the guts to go to the police station, right, and file a report?
She went back. Yeah, she went back. But the one that brought the second him losing his license was not Prissy.
Okay. All right. I thought she'd reported him, but I know there's a number of stories, and I know it's impossible to keep them straight when you're changing their names and everything. But we just got a couple minutes before we get to our bottom of the hour break. But, you know, for me, just the thing that I walked through in reading this, I find myself getting stirred up all over again, because women are so vulnerable around childbirth, you know, and how evil it is. How did you sort through, because here you're investigating, and we're going to get on the other side of the break a little bit more now to your story, what you learned about, but you're serving as an investigator, but you have a story in this as well. How did you keep your heart from not getting just completely overwhelmed with hatred or bitterness or whatever it is that would be natural for you to feel?
Well, you know what? That's not me. I mean, you know, people say, oh, this story is so amazing, you're so strong. Let me tell you, that had nothing to do with me. It had to do with Jesus Christ.
Hmm.
He has had me from the beginning. He's had me since I was a child. He has protected me. He has brought me through. There wasn't a door that was opened in McKaysville and in my research, in this investigation, that he didn't open. And, you know, some of them were absolutely literal physical locked doors.
Wow.
Any strength that I have, anything that's come out of this that is good is not mine, and I don't take credit for it, because he's truly, even to writing the book, he has been there, he has handled this, and he has taken care of it from the beginning.
Jane, you are amazing. When we come back, we'll hear more about Jane's story, just what she discovered about her story and all the others that kind of came with her investigative work. Jane Blasio is my guest. We'll be back in a minute.
And when you're lost at sea, I will be.
So good to know we serve a God who rescues us, redeems us for our lives from the pit. He's our Redeemer, our Restorer. How blessed are we? Thanks for tuning in to Suzy Larson Live. Talking to Jane Blasio. I love this gal. She's an investigator. She's also someone who was taken at birth from her birth parents and sold out the back door of a clinic by a very evil doctor. The title of her book, Taken at Birth, Stolen Babies, Hidden Lies, and My Journey to Finding Home. Got a handful of copies. And again, this book just reads like a novel. If you're interested in just this true story, but you want to get wrapped up in a book that'll make you forget to breathe, text the word book to 877-933-2484. So we talked a bit about Dr. Hicks and some of the things that he'd done. Let's go back to your investigative story, Jane. So you started to, as an adult, started to dig in. I think if I remember right, you sought out an investigator and he asked what you'd done so far. And he kind of realized you got your own gifts. You can do this. So maybe pick it up there.
Yeah. So yes, he was so nice to me when it came to getting me started. He told me, hone in on your skills, go work for a private investigator and see what you can pick up there, but just keep going with what you're doing. And so I did. I started, just researching. And of course, this was pre, you know, crazy internet days. So it was in libraries, it was in, you know, town halls and things like that. But my first trip down, you know, to take a look at McKaysville, That was really, I remember looking at the town and just going, wow, okay, this is a little scary. But every time that I was there, even if I didn't, I wasn't finding my direct information or my sister Michelle's direct information on birth family. And I realized after the first couple trips, it was going to be a whole lot harder than it was. God gave me something that would make me want to go back. And anyone that's done adoption, if they've done an adoption search, if there's anyone that's listening, they understand that, you know, sometimes you have to put it down and walk away from it because it's too emotionally overwhelming. So I had two things going on. I had my search that I was looking at as an investigator, how I was going to plot that out. And then, I, in my head, I'm looking for my birth family. So I'm not looking for somebody else's birth family. I was looking for mine. And so I would have to kind of win in waves. But every time that I went to McKaysville, even if it didn't look like there was much information that I was getting, he would give me something. And that would say, don't give up. Don't give up. You know, you still got some more trips in you. So, you know, it goes back to me saying, yeah, I don't like to be told no. And it's actually helped me on my law enforcement career over the years. I don't like being told no. I'll take an order, but you're going to have to explain to me why. And that really worked to my benefit looking for my birth family.
So, Jane, did you have any inkling how widespread this racket would be when you were started to dig? I mean, did you kind of have a sense I'm probably a tip of the iceberg here? Or were you mainly looking for your story and you uncovered something you weren't expecting to see?
Yeah. So I'm chuckling because I was so naive back then. I was 32 when the story broke in 1997. I knew my sister was from there. I knew I had a cousin. That was from there. I knew that there were a handful of people. I had absolutely no idea what I was getting into. And I think that was planned, you know, because if I would have known, I'm not sure that I would have kept up. I'm not sure if I would have started, to be honest with you, because it's been a lot, you know. But again, you know, God knows what he's doing, you know, And if it took striking me numb for a little bit or even dumb for a little bit, then, you know, the glory's to him. He knew how to handle everything, and he took care of it.
So you were asking all kinds of questions, and from what I understand, you really learned about others who were sold before you learned your story, right? Like, as you started to uncover things, you realized there was so much more to this that you probably – maybe I'm remembering that wrong. I dug through most of the book. But talk about that process of uncovering maybe other people's stories on your way to finding out your own.
Yeah, well, you know, that was what made me go to the newspaper in 1997 because I had uncovered all kinds of information about birth mothers. I'd met with some birth family down in McKaysville and in the surrounding areas. I had met with, I knew, of course, the adoptive families that were in my family and friends of the family and stuff. I was getting information about other people, but I had nothing about my sister and I, nothing. So I thought, you know, I've been doing this alone for like 14 years. Maybe if I get a group of people, once I found out that there were 200 plus other babies sold to Akron, I'm like, you know, maybe if I put it out there and I get a group of people, even if I just get five people, I won't be doing it by myself again. You know, maybe I can get some more information. Maybe we can storm wherever we need to storm. And that was what made me go to the columnist in the Akron Beacon Journal and ask her to put in a little note that said, anyone from the Hicks Clinic to please contact me. And then, of course, before I knew it, you know, within a month, it was on the front page and had gone out on the AP wire, and it just kind of went crazy with the media and birth family, people trying to find their birth mothers, and just people just reaching out, needing help. And so I had everything but my information, and it was overwhelming. So.
Did you happen to meet any moms? It was years later for them, I'm sure, but any moms who had a sense that their baby was still alive? I mean, I'm sure people are thinking everybody feels that way, but any kind of story like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. There were several. And I can remember sitting in this one woman's living room. Her husband had passed, but she was sitting there and she was sitting there with her kids from her marriage. And she still let's see, when would that have been? That would have been, so we're looking at, you know, 40 years later, and she's still breaking down, bawling, telling me that she knew, she heard that baby crying, and that her and her husband had gone back and had for 3 years pounded on Dr. Hicks' door and said, where's our baby? We want to know where that baby was, until he threatened them with legal action. And there was just, they just couldn't.
Oh, the audacity. Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wow. And she wasn't the only one. I had heard that from other mothers in the same circumstance. And, you know, a couple of them weren't married at the time, so they didn't have as much of, you know, they had the fierceness in them, but they didn't have backing. You know, they didn't have the support to really keep, you know, pounding on the door with him. But, absolutely. And I can remember just sitting there and just listening and her saying, do you think you can find my baby? And we never did. And I just, you know, it's heart-wrenching, absolutely heart-wrenching.
You know, there's a story, we're going to get to yours, and I want to find out what happened to Dr. Hicks, too, in just a bit, but there's one of the stories we touched on, I can't remember, you and I think maybe talked about it off the air, but Lewis is the name you gave him, but this one I almost could not bear, because, I mean, all of them are so wretched, and I don't understand why. It's one thing to steal a woman's baby and sell it. It's another thing to be a barbarian with these women, leaving them bleeding to death. What are you doing? You know, but this husband comes back with a gun because the doctor and the nurse will not let him in to see his wife who's delivering their baby. So he comes back with a gun going, you're going to let me see my baby and my wife. And when they finally let him in, she's lying there dead. So he thought, because she's covered in blood and the baby's gone. And he picks her up and brings her to a different doctor. And she's in a coma, if I remember, for a couple of months. I mean, am I telling that story correctly?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And the truth stands on its own. You can try to cover it up as much as you can, but it stands on its own. He knew. He knew. He just knew it was just not good. You see, it still stymies me. I've known this story forever, and it still stymies me. Mm-hmm. And you said the right word, the audacity. Where did this come from? This was pure evil. You don't just play God like that. And, you know, I believe he was trying to cover his tracks. He knew he had screwed up, you know, and he basically had witnesses to it, you know. How many women went into him that he did screw up like that and he didn't have a witness to? How much were some of those town officials looking the other way? This one had a witness, and it was in the story of Lewis.
And so his wife woke up out of the coma eventually, didn't she? Did she survive?
Mm-hmm. She did survive, yes.
And woke up wondering where her baby was.
Just want to know where that baby was, yeah. And
I can't stand it.
Yeah. So, you know,
I don't know how you did this work, Jane. I mean, I really do marvel again the fact that your story is so intermingled here and to find the heartbreak of so many other stories. We have another break coming up in just a couple minutes, but what has been the response of the people whom you've kind of unveiled their stories? Maybe they always had an inkling something wasn't right, and suddenly the truth starts to come out. How have people responded, the players that are in these stories, how have they responded to you?
Well, the majority of them have passed. Pretty much 90% of the people that are in my book, their stories, they've passed. The goodness of what has come out of these stories is that we have people that are responding and saying, I think I might be a Hicks baby. And that's what I look to. You know, I look to what God's restoring, not what a man destroyed, because that's what this whole story about the Hicks Clinic is about. That's what the book is about, restoring. Where's the redemption? And it is in these people. It's in everyone that was touched by the Hicks Clinic that can stand today and say, you know what? God knows what he's doing. And it was rough, but he knows what he's doing.
And he can redeem anything. And and anyone. So let's pause here. When we come back, we're going to hear the redemption part of the story. We want to find out what you learned about your own parents, Jane, and what happened to Dr. Hicks, and what you see God doing now in the midst of all this uncovering. Wow, what a story, Jane. Jane Blasio is her name. Her book, Taken at Birth, Stolen Babies, Hidden Lies, and My Journey to Finding Home. And one thing I keep remembering is God misses nothing. And one day he's going to uncover. And John Eldridge, who is a friend who's joined us on the show a lot of times, but one of my favorite things he says is, one day your story will be told correctly. I love that. More with Jane Blasio in a minute. Wow, thanks so much for tuning into Suzy Larson Live. This is a very story-driven show today, and I so appreciated Jane Blasio. She was a Hicks baby, sold at birth, passed through the back door of a clinic in North Georgia, and has served now more than 19 years in federal law enforcement. And as she sort of unraveled this tangled web, found out that there were hundreds of babies that were sold out the back door. And this doctor also performed abortions on women who didn't want them. It's a marvel to me. So before we hear about how your story wrapped, Jane, tell us what finally happened to Dr. Hicks.
So Dr. Hicks, he passed away in 1972, and he was 83 years old, and he died with leukemia. So for the last several years of his life, he was struggling with that. The details of he was found guilty of the medical malpractice, and he was arrested, you know, for doing that, for doing an abortion on someone that didn't ask for it, and they struck a plea bargain with him, and that was in 1964, and that's my birth certificate shows that I was born on December 6th of 64, when I was actually born sometime in January of 65, and that was because they told him, if you practice medicine, you're going to go to prison. But since you're sick with leukemia, we'll let you stay out of prison, but you can't practice medicine. And so he snuck me in. So my birth certificate, and they made that plea bargain on December 8th of 1964. So they snuck me in. He changed the birth certificate to December 6th when I was actually born in January of 65. So even the law, even the threat of not, you know, of going to prison didn't stop this man from doing what it was that he, you know, that he wanted to do. And and I think that was, you know, that was basically, that was the foundation of who he was. He did what he got away with. You know, that nobody stopped him from doing.
And greed and power, it seems, you know, drove him.
Absolutely.
What is it going to be like for him to face God on Judgment Day? I can only imagine. Oh, my goodness, the lives that he's destroyed. And I mean, and how evil just kind of perpetuates itself. If you keep ignoring the moral conscience checks in your spirit, eventually you don't feel them anymore. I mean, it's, wow, what a marvel. Excuse me, Jane, how about you? When did you finally learn the truth about your own parents?
So, it's been a journey, and if I kind of want to hold on to that information to have a nice, pleasant surprise for everyone that's reading the book. But I can tell you that I have found my maternal and paternal side. I know my history. Everyone that's adopted, you know, they have a right to know their truth, and, you know, their truth being their heritage, their medical information, you know, who's in their lineage, you know, where'd they come from? Who was their ancestor in, you know, in 1885? And I have all of that. And so it's been wonderful. God's been really good to me. And he's just opened that up for me.
And so now you've got some relationships with these people?
I do, yes. I do. I have an extended family that is just amazing.
And how about the parents that raised you? Are they still alive, or have they passed away?
No, they both passed by the time I was 30. My adoptive mom passed when I was 23, and then my adoptive father died when I was 30.
Wow. I can only imagine, you know, I mean, guilt and shame and condemnation wreak havoc on a person's health. And if I remember right, I think your mom battled some mental health. I mean, like, that was one of the reasons your dad wanted to break some rules to get you get her some babies, thinking that would help her. Is that right?
Yes, yes. My mother was, she didn't think much of herself. And she had made some missteps early on in life that she definitely had condemnation. And, you know, it was, when you have family members that are telling you that you're just, you know, you're not good. And then you have your own self-condemnation and it telling you that you're not good. And, you know, she struggled with that her whole life. She struggled with that.
Wow, it's painful. I look again at what God has done, but I can only imagine that just the bracing for impact, living bracing for impact as you're raising babies that, you know, you really didn't get legally, you know? Boy, that's got to be so painful. So you investigate illegal adoptions. Jane, how prevalent is that? Is it happening more often than even in today's day than we would imagine?
So most of what I have done has been with the Hicks Clinic. Now, I do adoption search. So as far as investigating, you know, I'm not out actively. I mean, I work full time, so it's really hard for me to do too much. The referrals that come through my website, I normally give them to someone else, like a search angel or someone to help them find their genealogy. Illegal adoptions, well, you know, what Dr. Hicks did in the 40s, 50s, and 60s would fall under the banner of human trafficking. So that's something that, HSI, that's their specialty. They track that down. But I do the adoption search, and that's basically my subject matter expertise.
Okay, that's where you spend your time.
Yes.
Wow. Well, what was this process for you when you're writing this book and revisiting some of these stories, how that you had to, you know, kind of relive in some ways as you're telling them? I mean, what kind of process did God take you on as you wrote this book?
I slept a lot. We'll just say that. it was because it was emotional. You know, he gave me a better understanding of my parents. He let me see through an adult's eyes some of those things that as a child I didn't understand and wasn't able to relate to. And so chapter two of the book, Elvis Presley's Sunday Religion, was the hardest chapter. And it wasn't because I couldn't write it. It was because I wrote so much. It was, you know, my editor said, you know, this chapter, you need to cut this down a little bit. You've got too much information in here. Because God was just showing me that, you know, what happened to you, Jane, was all right, and that there was a purpose for it. And I want you to understand now what that purpose was. And, you know, I liken it to God has an assignment for everybody. This was my assignment. And it wasn't until I was much older that I realized that this whole story and what has happened to me, my circumstance, that's what God put me here for. And not that I'm some, you know, I'm no, by no means saying I'm some savior or it took me, because there's plenty of people from the Hicks Clinic that have done really good work on their own searches and helping others as well. But he said, you know, this is my assignment for you. I want you to be able to work through this. And I want you to be able to just lean into me and let me just show you what forgiveness is. And when I say my assignment, that's kind of what my assignment is. He's teaching me about forgiveness because I had such a hard time with that. If that makes sense. I know I'm kind of going in circles here with it, but I had so much hatred. I detail it in the book, so many things that had gone wrong in my childhood that I had a hard time wrapping my head around forgiveness. And so I feel like my assignment in the Hicks Clinic story is to tell people that that is key to everything. And it seems so simplistic because we know it's through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ on the cross. That's where forgiveness comes from. But it's the walking it every day. And I feel like I just need to tell people, man, just every day this forgiveness is so freeing. Yeah. So.
No, appreciate that. You know, there's so many injustices that happen in our story. I mean, everybody has trauma to some degree. Not yours is significant, but everybody has some kind of trauma. And I think if we get stuck in unforgiveness or stuck in the idea, what would my life have been like if this wouldn't have happened? Those are things that do keep us kind of stuck. And the idea that God knows and he sees, and it's so hard to reconcile that he allows, but he does, but he redeems somehow, some way. And if we let him, he'll use us in ways that are disproportionate to the very thing that happened to us. Isn't that right?
Yes, yes. And I hope he has brought me to a point to where I hope that when I go to be with the Lord, that I see Dr. Hicks standing there.
Wow. That's amazing.
I want him to be there. And that's, yes. So I feel like that's what he assigned me, was to be able to learn that forgiveness so that.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. And I appreciate that. I mean, that confronts me because I felt stirred up as I'm reading what he has done to so many families. And that, so obviously after this show, I'm going to go get on my knees. Got some work to do here because that's a high standard and that is biblical. What you're saying is so important. We just got about a minute and a half or so left, a couple minutes, I should say. What do you know about God now that you didn't know 5, 10 years ago?
I know that I can trust him. I'm a let's get it done kind of person. God has shown me that I don't have to plan or strategize on his behalf. His plan for this world doesn't depend on me. And, you know, my trust in him has brought that deeper understanding of his love and the forgiveness that he has for me.
And what would you say when you look at your story is the most redemptive part?
That it's not just my story. It is everyone's story. And that he's letting this story be told because it's everyone's been lied to. Everyone has had something done to them that has just broken them. And he's saying it's all right. It's okay because I can take you from these extreme crazy stories, these things that have happened, and I can bring you to a place that you're leaning into me and you're doing my will and you are free.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, one last question. Do you have a vision for what you want to see God do in and through you in the days ahead? Just ministry, work-wise? Any dreams?
Oh, for me?
Mm-hmm.
So I am right now working on building a kind of like a program, a ministry for women. And I've got a tentative title on it called the Witness Protection Program. And it's something that's going to help women come together as a community of believers that falls into Romans 12, where he's talking about don't backbite, don't, you know, if someone's weeping, weep with them, bringing women together so that there's no division in your women's ministry at church or, you know, in your families, and just bringing them together and bringing them closer to Jesus Christ.
Jane, I'm so sorry. We've got to wrap now. The time is up, but this has been fantastic, and I love the idea of your ministry. I pray God just prospers it. Bless you for giving us your time today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jane Blasio, her book is titled Taken at Birth. What a story. Hope you found some encouragement here. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Suzy Larson Live. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player. And never miss a show.